Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Robert, 30 years of Raw is in the books, and I think the show ended kind of flat, even though it featured, and some may disagree with me, but for me it did, it featured the unadvertised appearance of Brock Lesnar, and I think they thought they had something with that. But then Brock came out, and fans cheered. Some did, some popped. Hey, big stars here. And then he went on to cost Bobby Lashley his chance to beat the heel, Austin Theory, for the U.S. title. And it came across as if the crowd sort of had a mixed reaction or maybe a negative reaction towards that. And then we had this just abrupt end to the show because they were running a little long, apparently. And it was sort of an unceremonious, unsatisfying end and continued the streak of pro wrestling promoters excitedly announcing an ODQ stipulation has been added to a match and pretending that means the match is going to be more exciting for you, the fans, and we'll finally settle something, as if we're all dumb enough to not remember the last 375 instances of that stip being added, which led to an unsatisfying finish that didn't solve anything regarding the wrestlers who were fighting in the ring. There's a lot we can talk about on the show, a lot of big names, and certainly there is plenty to talk about, and we'll cover a lot. But I want to start with that finish. It's freshest on my mind. Robert, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm with you, Wade, rather flat. I don't think the Brock return was quite the big surprise that people would have liked to have seen tonight. I also think it fit into the theme of so many other returns or appearances we had on the night that it's a lot of guys we generally have seen. I mean, we went through whole periods of seeing Brock Lesnar, much less than we've seen him over the past year. So it didn't have this big comeback fill. And the people are into Bobby. They have been for a really long time. So that puts him in an awkward position. And again, I don't think Brock quite has that aura at this point where he did, you know, at certain points when maybe he was cheating with Roman Reigns or Braun Strowman or whoever, where the heel face dynamics completely didn't matter. I don't think this situation is one like that. And then, as you said, the way it went off air, I think even kind of added to it, just because, you know, now I guess we're in the era of the strict, no overrun, although you thought maybe you could get a minute or two based off of this one. So I just thought all the way around, a flat finish to what was generally a pretty flat show, say, for the first hour.
Yeah, yep. The Lashley character is being presented, obviously, as a babyface, and MVP has been making overtures to reunite Hurt Business, and Lashley turned him down. That totally made me think MVP was going to, or you know, was going to interfere in some way with Omos or something like that. I don't know if it was a red herring or meant to be, or I just read too much into it. Maybe it was meant to make people think, it's going to be MVP and Omos and who knows who else, Shelton and Cedric maybe. And instead it was Lesnar, and that made it more of a surprise. But what it did is it set up Lashley as a babyface and Lesnar as the jerk who's ruining Lashley's chance to win the U.S. title. And I don't like a character who's just a babyface, like the legend, who's just in it for himself, and you're supposed to love him for it. Or at least, you know, I think people just sort of tolerate Lesnar being in it for himself. I think that people want to see Lesnar, if he's meant to be a babyface, going after people like Theory, not somebody like Lashley. And if he's meant to be a heel, then that changes things, but that's not really established. So, what'd you think about the MVP interaction and kind of the shot of MVP as Lashley was walking away that certainly suggested MVP is going to, you know, because it's an ODQ stip, get involved in this match?
Yeah, it certainly crossed my mind because they don't usually do those kind of things that are intentionally for no reason. Usually there's some sort of intent to those little things, those little lingering camera shots, as they did with MVP. So I thought it was there, like, in the back of my mind, but I didn't think it was laid on super thick throughout the night, the way sometimes these things can be telegraphed. So I'm pretty much okay with the way they did it. They need to move that storyline along one way or the other. It kind of feels like it's been spinning its wheels for a little while, the will they or won't they storyline with the Hurt Business and Bobby. So you know, I'd like to see some progression there, but I don't think it took away in the fact that you were waiting for MVP and when they do, you know, kind of too hard of a tease. I don't think we quite got that.
Yep, fair enough. Overall, give your thoughts, not like a breakdown of every segment, but a little bit more of your thoughts on how they delivered. I know you said a lot of these are legends we had seen before. Just kind of overall your expectations for this theme show and what they delivered. I know you're not giving it an enthusiastic thumbs up, but give a little bit more detail on maybe what would have made this more satisfying.
Well, and it's a difficult spot to be in, I think, for them to pull off. And they've done this a few times over the years where they have a major show as kind of the go-home show to the Rumble, which is kind of an awkward place to be. Traditionally, they kind of forget about promoting the Rumble during these shows because they're overstuffed with the legends. And we've definitely had plenty of the legends tonight. But as I mentioned, they were kind of the common legends. You know, seeing Triple H isn't exactly a novelty at this point. And neither is Hogan, for that matter. Who knows what the hell was going on with his mic there at the beginning. I thought going into the night, what they did was...
Robert, I think a black person was in charge of his microphone.
I was assuming he was just saying racist stuff, and there was a poor guy on the delay with editing. That's what I assumed was happening. Yeah, I wanted the full context of what he's saying, the unedited version. But then again, last time we asked for that, we didn't want to hear exactly what he had to say. Anyway, my point to that was the stuff that I thought going into the night that they did pretty well were kind of the three major segments of the in the now stuff, being the Theory and Lashley, Bayley and Becky, and then, of course, the Sami Zayn stuff. I think they went 1-for-3 on those. I didn't like the whole bait and switch of the cage match, the way they pulled that, and we said how this segment felt flat, and it just felt like it felt kind of house showy. I thought a lot of the threads took really long to build up to not a whole lot of payoff. And again, you're on a go home show. You probably don't want a whole lot of payoff, but you were kind of building this thing as one of those tent pole, you know, Raws in the new year to get everybody back and reset. And there wasn't, if Brock was the big surprise, I don't think that's a big enough surprise. Obviously they probably have other stuff in the chamber for the Rumble, but it kind of felt like a show out of obligation more so than a show of celebration.
It felt like a quilt put together by a lot of different people who never stepped back to kind of look at whether together in the end. I also didn't like, and this I want to save to get into a little bit later on the show here, I didn't like the opening segment with the Bloodline, and maybe you can help me like it more. I just felt like we missed a chapter from last week into this week, in terms of Heyman turning so sharply against Sammy and Sammy's reactions to how people were reacting. I wrote about what my issues were in my Raw report at pwtorch.com with this segment. But I want to talk to you and callers and emails, hopefully, about that segment, too, as the show progresses here. But even that, you know, I mean, it was a long segment and a major segment. And I just didn't think it made a lot of sense, but maybe there are some things I'm missing or some dots that others can connect, including you, Robert. We'll get into that in a little bit. I want to pause and introduce the show so we can get to callers ASAP and bring them into the program, because that's a cool part about this format. We also are expecting and hoping to hear from Matt, an on-site correspondent in the building tonight. He did send some email notes to us in case he is unable to call in. He said there are some logistical issues he's dealing with, but hopefully we'll hear from Matt in a little bit and get his perspective from inside the building. If anyone else is live streaming us, is they're getting in their car after the show, feel free to give us a call too. That happens sometimes, even if we didn't plan for you to be our on-site correspondent. You can certainly just call up and be a caller and let us know you're at the show. By the way, we're always looking for on-site correspondents. I'll slip in a quick plug here. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. If you are attending a future Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, let me know ahead of time, and we can bring you on to give details on what it was like in the building, including off-air happenings, crowd reactions, and that type of thing. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. But now let's pause and introduce the show formally and then get to calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, January 23rd, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program and the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter. and the website, pwtorch.com. And I'm the host of this, along with several other podcasts, some VIP exclusive, others free, including tomorrow's free flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's our blue logo show, as opposed to this, our red logo show, which is our post-show format. The podcast format covers a broad array of topics, and Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net and his Pro Wrestling Boom podcast will be my co-host tomorrow. We have a lot to talk about, including previewing the Royal Rumble, taking a look at the latest happenings in AEW, looking back on tonight's Raw, and more. And you are invited to send questions and topic suggestions for tomorrow's flagship to that same email address that I mentioned earlier, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. The other voice you heard so far is Robert Vyhos, who is the host of the PW Torch Daily Cast Monday night show, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Robert, it's been a while. I know your schedule precluded you from being a co-host for the last handful of weeks, but it's great to have you back.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Wade. I figured this would be a good spot to come in. I wanted to have to do as little analysis as possible. So I'd just be talking about entrances and pops all night long. I didn't know I'd have this long drawn out stuff that I'd have to discuss.
Yep. It's very, very clever of you to make your first available date Raw 30. You know, you appoint to yourself.
I learned from Triple H, Hogan. You know, don't put yourself on TV during Monday Night Football. Make your comeback on January 4th. I mean, you got to do this right.
I love it. That's so funny. So this should be fun conversation. There's so much to talk about, such an eclectic mix, even if you're disappointed in what WWE did in certain respects. We want to hear what you liked, what you didn't like. And I assume we've got some people calling us who normally are watching Monday Night Football at this time and are back with us for the road to the Rumble in WrestleMania. So consider yourself formally invited to become a caller, whether it's a return caller or a first-time caller. The way to do that is first to live stream our show. I know the vast majority of you download our show on Tuesday mornings and Tuesday afternoons, and that is fantastic, and we appreciate you doing that. But you can hear us live on Monday night after Raw at WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can navigate to the link. Even better, there's a direct link to the show every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown on PWTorch.com at the top and bottom of my TV report. You can also look for the link on Twitter at PWTorch. Follow us and go to PWTorch on Twitter, and there'll be a link there also that I post right around the time each of those shows ends, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. With that said, you can listen live, and when you do, call us. And that number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. You don't have to memorize that number. It should appear on the screen when you're live streaming, but you can also just call and listen. If you have that number handy, we also list that on Twitter at PW Torch and also in my TV report. So lots of ways to find the number. You don't have to memorize it or figure out how to look it up. Otherwise, you can also participate if you don't listen to our live stream by emailing WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. So with that business taken care of, we have people lining up on the phone lines, and we're eager to hear what other people thought of the show. There's so much to get into: the DX skit, the Bloodline, Hulk Hogan's appearance, Ric Flair's appearance, the poker game going on behind the scenes. Did they use the legends well? Who did you wish you saw who did not appear in person? We'll open up the phone lines and let you lead the way for much of the rest of the show. And we'll start area code 908. 908, appreciate you calling. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is AJ from Virginia. How are you?
I'm doing good, AJ. Good to hear from you. What do you think
of
Raw tonight?
I'm a first-time caller. Yeah, great show. And I'm actually stuck in the parking lot right now, but it was a completely sold-out show. So it's nice to see for once the areas weren't tarped off. And what a phenomenal show from start to end. It was just nonstop. And there were just some amazing surprises throughout the show. I thought they were very smart with having Hogan open up the show, typically whoever shows up first gets a lot of cheers, a lot of pop. So I thought that was a really smart play on their end. And that Bloodline segment was one of the finest segments I've ever seen. It was received so well. And the pop that Sammy got was the largest and the loudest pop I've ever witnessed. I mean, this guy is so over. And the way he performs, it's just magic. And with Jay coming to his defense, it was just one of the highlights of the entire show and of the story as well, right? Because Jay and Roman started this whole Bloodline story. So to see Jay come to Sammy's aid and call him a brother was really phenomenal. Really, really well done.
Let me ask about a couple things, and I'll let Robert jump in too with any questions he has. The response to Hulk Hogan, you said it was strategically placed. First, did anything at all happen before he came out? Was there a welcome to the show, a dark match, anything? And then part two is, were there boos? Was it wild cheers? Body language-wise, based on what I saw, it wasn't like everybody just exploded out of their chairs for him. Just kind of characterize the response Hogan did get.
Yeah, sure. No, it was very positive. When I got to the stadium, I noticed they had a lot of Hulk Hogan merchandise, which was a smart play just to get folks mentally ready for Hogan. And they also made a smart call by not having him walk over to the stage and overextend his place in terms of how people perceive him, right? So it was short and sweet, and he said his punchlines, but all in all, everyone was cheering for him. I didn't notice any boos come through at all.
Well, that's got to make him happy, because it's been a rough road since all the comments that he made about black people came out. He's met some boos in a hostile crowd. So maybe people are more forgiving of that as time has passed. And like you said, strategic placement, and he didn't overstay his welcome. So those things work too. And who can boo Jimmy Hart? He was standing there on the stage, his Hogan security blanket. let me throw it to co-host Robert Vijos. And Robert, do you have anything you want to ask AJ?
You mentioned about the Sammy pop being pretty loud. It sounded like on TV, kind of everyone in that segment was getting cheers through various parts. Was the angle itself over, or did you feel it was more just Sammy that was the center of attention, or was the whole angle itself up to and including what happened in the tag match after? You'd kind of elaborate a little more on the pops and what the vibe was like in the building.
Yeah, absolutely. This was perhaps the one segment of the Bloodline where each character, including Paul Heyman, played a very significant role. And what was really interesting was they took this story to another level where you see the two different sides within the Bloodline, which was pretty phenomenal, right? With Sammy aligning with the Usos, and Solo, Heyman, and Roman on the other side of the coin. So I thought from a storytelling perspective, what a way to set things up in terms of the Bloodline possibly splitting into two and the characters, each character having a very significant role to play. I thought it was just mastery in storytelling. And what they did at the end with Jimmy getting hurt and Sammy asking to go in just elevated it to another level, right? Because they're really showing a really strong union between the two folks that no one ever thought would be as tight as they've become with Jay and Sammy. So it was just really well received through and through. Everyone loved Paul Heyman opening things up. The folks in the audience, including myself, did find Paul Heyman coming at Sammy so strongly a little bit surprising. I wish they had done a better job at softening Paul Heyman's position towards Sammy. It seemed a little bit surprising and a little bit too sharp. But I think they wanted to contrast it with Jay standing up as as the hero on the other side, right? So I think from that perspective, I think gave Jay a bigger pop, just in contrast to Paul Heyman.
Go ahead, Robert. Do you want to ask anything else?
Yeah, and then as the night wore on, I'm really curious about the setup for the cage match. Obviously, it's a long always just to get the cage set up. You had the entrances of the two women, and then you had really just an angle instead of a match. Was that deflating in any way to the crowd, or you know, was everyone still kind of all in at that point? What was it like at that point, kind of in the mid part of the show?
Yeah, it was really bizarre. It was actually more confusing than anything else. It didn't make sense why Becky was being, you know, attacked by all three people initially. And the way it ended was just very sudden. But then later on, there were some news clippings on Twitter indicating that since the Bloodline segment ran over, they had to cut Bailey and Becky's match short. So it was basically a consequence of the Bloodline running over, which I don't think anyone's complaining about. But it was disappointing for Becky's fans, right, seeing her be in a steel cage match that everyone was looking forward to, and it ended before it almost even started. So that was a little bit strange.
As far as the legends who appeared start to finish, was there any that jumped out as getting an especially big response compared to others or especially small? I know in some cases it's tough to tell, like Kurt Angle, you know, sort of just, you know, following along conspicuously behind DX. But he had his moments too and some comedy moments. I'm sure they aired everything on the big screen too. So yeah, were there any responses on the high or low end that stood out to you?
I think Ric Flair probably got one of the biggest pops. DX, obviously everyone loves. The segment with Kurt was great. I think in terms of how the legends were treated, this show was perhaps the best treatment of the legends because no one was slapped, spit on, embarrassed, thrown in mud, or anything of that sort.
Yeah.
They truly showed the legends a lot of respect. As they should, and I think the fans, including myself, you appreciate that. You know, I drove 3 hours from Virginia for this show.
Wow.
Because I don't know if there's going to be another opportunity to see Undertaker, Kurt Angle, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, all these guys get together, right? So it was a well worth it trip, and the fact that they were all treated with respect and dignity, I think goes a long way for us longtime fans.
Well, that means Vince McMahon was not in charge tonight, obviously.
You know, I was surprised. I was hoping to see Vince McMahon. But yeah, he was a no-show. Although it was funny that Triple H made that one line, how booking is not easy. Everyone got a big pop from that one.
Yes, and I thought that was setting up Vince McMahon coming out to No Chance in Hell, and instead it was Teddy Long, and that was a good use of Teddy Long. I especially enjoyed him saying, stating the obvious and acting like it was this genius idea that only someone of Teddy Long's stature could come up with. It was very, very, very much in tune with his character and his past. So Undertaker, we got the bell gong thing, and then it switched to a song that I bet a lot of people in that arena had never heard before. I'm sure some have and forgot they heard it. And he comes out on a bike, on a motorcycle, and, you know, the announcers are like, we haven't seen this version of Undertaker in 20 years. Was the crowd into it or not into it because they got the tease of the dead man?
Yeah, no, I think everyone is very much into it. I think it was the best of both worlds, right? One, I don't think this show, given all the talent and all the storylines with the Bloodline in particular, I don't think they have 15 minutes to see everyone watch Undertaker come to stage in his traditional form, right? So to tease it with the first 15 seconds and then switch it up to the American Badass, I think a lot of folks expected. So it was received really well, and the segment between Taker and Bray was just awesome. You know, it's those two characters everyone's always wanted to see in the ring together. I don't know if they've ever fought together, but it was a really cool way to see Taker give Bray props and almost kind of hand the baton on, right, to someone like Bray. So that was received really well, too. LA Knight got a huge pop, too, by the way. I mean, he's really cool on the microphone. He can hold his own. And when he says his, yeah, everyone just kind of, you know, shouts along. So he's a really cool character. I'm surprised he can hold his own with Taker and Bray in the picture. So I was impressed by him.
Yeah, that's a good use of LA Knight. And I think from the moment anybody saw LA Knight for the first time on TV in whatever company it was, Impact or NXT or otherwise, they're like, oh, this guy's made for WWE for a segment like that. That's how you utilize him. How about the Ric Flair response?
Oh, Ric Flair was great. Yeah, you know, Ric Flair is throughout the show, as people are even ticketing in, walking to their chairs, you just hear woos nonstop. I was rocking my Ric Flair shirt today, and I'm all wooed out. But I wish Ric Flair gets a segment without Charlotte Flair. You know, he's a legend and an icon in his own right. He doesn't need to bow down to Charlotte. I wish he had his own space without Charlotte, but he got a huge pop. He's very well respected, and he got a great ovation.
Robert, I'll throw back to you. Do you have anything else that you want to ask AJ?
And just really quickly, the Owen segment was quick, short, you know, sweet with the physicality with Miz. How over, I would say, or, you know, what was the level of the interest in Owens, and what has your been perception, I think, you know, beyond that? Are people in the building seem to be into Owens as a challenger, or is he really being received as kind of the prop in this Sammy Roman bloodline storyline?
Yeah, good question. KO did not get a huge response this time around, and usually when I watch on TV, he's really well received. I think perhaps he wasn't received as well is because that bloodline segment was just so strong. And I think with KO just pushing his agenda with Roman, I think it was a lot of, you know, we've heard it, you know, so there wasn't a lot of applause for KO just because of how great the bloodline segment was. But he's still a fan favorite, right? I don't think he can do any wrong. I think just the placement of his coming in seemed a little bit forced. I don't know if he needed to make an appearance in today's show.
Another question. Oh, go ahead. Is that a follow-up, Robert?
Well, and I just wanted to ask because that reminded me about the video package for Cody. Did that air in the building? And if so, how was that?
It did. Oh man. So I'm not a huge Cody fan. I feel personally he's a little corny. He's a little too goody good. But WWE does such a phenomenal job with these packages. You actually got goosebumps because you see him, you know, with his torn pack fighting with Seth Rollins, and then they show his journey back, hitting the weights, getting in shape. There's a quick snippet of him hugging Dusty, and you know, how can you not as a fan cheer for that and love that? So there was a mutual, you know, kind of looking around at folks around me, and everyone was saying that was dope. So they did a really good job at popping him up through that video package.
Glad you asked that, Robert. I would not have thought to mention it, and that's good to get that thoughts on the crowd response, especially in Philly, you know, where the fans can be a little more discerning, and they can sometimes be a bellwether of what might not go as WWE wants later. And if Cody's getting an all-good response, that isn't surprising, but it's also a good confirmation that things are going well at this point. Maybe my last question for you, we'll see, is the Lashley-Theory match. I'm curious what kind of reaction Theory got as a main event top-level championship heel, and then how popular Lashley was compared to other popular wrestlers. And then finally, the Lesnar run in an ODQ match. My interpretation on TV was, oh my God, Brock Lesnar's here. Oh no. He's going to beat up the guy Lashley, who we've been cheering, and help Theory win, and we don't like that, and now we have mixed feelings, and then the show went off the air. So that was my take on TV. I'm curious, AJ, what the vibe was in the building from your perspective.
Yeah. So I think all three characters, Theory, Bobby, and Brock, were received well for different reasons, right? I think the fans have a lot of respect for all three of these characters. I'll start with Theory first. The fact that Theory, you know, stripped away that selfie gimmick and came around as a much more serious wrestler, I think has been such a great look for him. So in his match with Bobby, while there were several fans chanting, I don't know if you guys caught it on TV, "You still suck, you still suck," there was a huge response on the other side with fans saying, "No, he doesn't. He's pretty awesome," right? So I think fans have grown to appreciate and respect Theory. And what he did with the table was just genius, how he pulled out the table to get the initial cheers and then yanked it back underneath the ring was just such a pure heel play. And it just shows that he has great instincts, and he just looks completely jacked. So for someone to look as big as Bobby Lashley, I think that in itself is pretty impressive, right? So I think with Theory, I think fans have grown to appreciate his character. He does a great job as a heel, and he does some solid work in the ring. So that I think is kind of how he's being received, which is a good sign. And then with Bobby, what was interesting was Bobby is someone who, across the entire arena, you see fans responding to Bobby really well. So what you don't see so much is everyone yelling out Bobby in unison, but there's sort of a soft acknowledgement and appreciation for someone who just does really good work, consistent work. And he's liked, I don't know if he's loved and adored as much as he probably ought to be, but I think there's a huge admiration that fans have for him across the arena. So that was really nice to see. And then with Brock, I mean, he just got the ultimate pop. So out of the three of them, even though Bobby's the face, Brock, people were waving bye to him as he was walking away. So, and it was my first time actually seeing Brock Lesnar in person, and I was hoping he would show up, and my God, is he a beast. I mean, just seeing this guy in person, he's really something else. So all three got top and respect for different reasons, if that makes sense.
What was your reaction after the show ended, and did anything happen after that? Because it, you know, I know you don't know in the building when the show goes off the air, but it seemed like they were running a little long, and boy, did they just cut away as soon as Lesnar stood up, you know, was reacting to the finish of the match.
Yeah, that was it. I was hoping Vince would come out, maybe off camera, or someone else would come out just thanking the fans for 30 years. They didn't have that this time around, right? I remember I was at the 25-year anniversary, and, you know, Vince came out, said thank you and whatnot. So you didn't really have anyone giving a heartfelt, genuine thank you to the fans. And the show ended with just Bobby just kneeling down on stage. And what was cool was when Bobby got out of the stage, he actually took his time to walk around the entire ring and shake hands and give high fives and take pictures with fans. And that was really cool. That's something I always look out for, to see which wrestler is actually being really generous with their time in, you know, meeting and greeting folks, taking pictures. So that was really cool. He was there probably for a good 5 to 10 minutes, I would say, after people had started walking out, just taking his time, saying hi and hello and high fives to everyone. So that was really cool.
Cool. Robert, was there anything else you thought to bring up before we sign off with or let AJ go?
No, I think we got most of it covered.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything else you want to add? Anything else jump out from the video features or Jerry Lawler coming out or anything else, fan signs, fan reaction?
The only one thing that stood out to me is Bianca Belair's match with Sonya Deville. The crowd was just completely dead. I don't know how it came across on TV.
Yeah.
And it was actually, it was a good match, and Bianca is just a hell of a performer. But for some reason, they just weren't able to get the crowd engaged. So that was disappointing because Bianca is a really good performer. But I can't think of anything else. That's something that stood out to me.
Cool. Well, AJ, I appreciate you calling up and providing that in-arena perspective for us. That was really cool.
Absolutely. And, hey, you guys do a great job. Wade, you and the entire team, I'm a huge fan. I always tell people about you guys. Everyone go VIP. You guys are awesome. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, AJ. Hope you call again, even if you're not attending in person.
Sure thing. Thanks, guys. Take care.
You bet. Appreciate it. That was very nice of him. We, we'll give out the phone number here one more time and then get to more callers. Our number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. A lot of you have called up and are just listening in. Feel free to push 1 on your phone if our conversation sparks a question or comment from you. We will now go to Brad in Florida up next. Brad, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about tonight's Raw?
Hey, guys, that was a good call. I'm also looking forward to hopefully hearing from Matt, who I know is on site as well. He's very insightful and, you know, might have a little bit of a different perspective, but AJ was great. Just a few things, because I'm sure you have plenty of other callers, but, you know, I was surprised, I'm sure you guys were too, that Stone Cold wasn't a part of this tonight. I think that indicates very strongly to him being in the Royal Rumble. You know, I can't see any reason why. I mean, he, when you think of Raw, he's like one of the first things you think of, like him, Vince McMahon, you know. So I think, you know, him not being there was indicative of something bigger. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, it was conspicuous. And I don't really think there's an excuse, even if it's let's save the pop for a WrestleMania-related angle of some kind, at the Rumble or otherwise. Because I mean, Raw wouldn't have made it 10 years if it wasn't for him. I mean, I think that's a reasonable assertion. you know, he was such a key to Raw making a comeback against Nitro. And, you know, he was in, you know, he was in the highlight clips and there was a, you know, commercial for hosting the A&E series, Superstar series. But, yeah, it just doesn't feel like a Raw, you know, 5 or 10 year anniversary without more of a presence from Austin, even just a video message. And I know they don't like doing a ton of those because it's like, yeah, I couldn't be bothered to travel to be there, but I still got a chance to be on the show. They like for people to be there in person and live. But it jumped out to me. Robert, how about you?
Yeah, I noticed it as well, especially because, like you mentioned, with the A&E stuff and then even the report by Fightful earlier today, it feels like Austin's like more with the company now than he has been for a while. So it does seem, you know, intentional. That is not there. It seems like whenever they need to get him for that, you know, once every 2 year reunion show, they generally do. But I do think, you know, I do think that that hints more heavily with a Royal Rumble in Texas, you know, in an arena, you know, literally in a building where he won the first one, that he will be around, although it doesn't necessarily guarantee it. But I think it goes through what I was saying earlier, that just a lot, with the exception, obviously, of Hogan and Flair in respect to what their careers were, there was not a lot of top line acts on this show. There wasn't the normal Trish and the Lita stuff that you normally see on these shows and several others. It was a reunion show. It was more of a reunion show, I think, than really a big, you know, let's blow it out and get all the top line big names out here to sell this thing.
Yeah, I don't want to get I don't know, too I mixed feelings on it, because like the Austin possibility of his involvement at Mania. It's like, I just feel like we're looking ahead of on a script of a TV series we're into, and we haven't gotten to that episode yet. And it's my mixed feelings on that stuff getting out. I know, Sean Rathap just doing his job, reporting on different possibilities out there. But in any case, I think Austin not being on this Raw, no matter what else is going on, just feels like it wasn't a full, complete celebration of a remarkable feat, which is 30 years of any TV show of any kind, and certainly a cable show with the tumultuous ups and downs of ratings and scandals and competition and changes in the TV landscape. For Raw to still be, very distant to Monday Night Football in the NFL for, nearly half the year, but still demographically strong and very much valued by USA Network or any cable network at this point is really something. So anyway, Brad, I'll throw back to you.
You know, Wade, I thought you made a really astute point, quick point, but earlier when you said it felt like the Sami Zayn Bloodline segment was missing a chapter. And I know exactly what you mean. Like, the way SmackDown ended on Friday was, or I'm sorry, the way, not just the way it ended, but the last thing that Roman had said to Sami was, I want you to make sure the private jet's ready. I want you to make sure the limo's ready. We're going to go out to the ring. We're going to handle business in this contract signing, and then we'll meet you wherever, or something kind of like that. And Sami Zayn, you know, apparently you think he's doing that at SmackDown, and then he comes out on Raw, and it's the trial, and it's almost like you don't understand why they're so mad at him, because he wasn't supposed to be there anyway to help them during that contract signing, according to what they had said on Friday night. So the fact that, it was almost like that whole thing was skipped, and all of a sudden they're just furious at him. And that, yep. I mean, that's what we're alluding to, right? I mean, that's what you were trying to say, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really good segment if there had been another week of television to establish why Heyman was acting so differently than the guy saying, Sammy, might be better for you to leave right now. Roman's, pretty uptight. And then the idea that Solo just takes commands from Heyman and is willing to – Solo's been sort of this mystery figure. And suddenly they revealed, oh, yeah, he'd just walk up behind Sammy and give him a Samoan spike from behind. It's like, well, that's a big development, but it felt more just – in pursuit of something else as opposed to protecting the kind of ongoing mystery of Solo. And that wasn't a huge issue with it, but it was just among a handful of things that didn't make a ton of sense to me about the segment because of just some of the things you just pointed out, Brad, from Friday. I mean, are they mad at Sammy because he didn't run to the ring sooner for the save, even though he was in charge of the private jet and getting Roman a quick exit from the building on Friday? This felt sloppy to me. It was a compelling segment. I loved, if you isolate it from the fact that it feels like a chapter's missing, Jay standing up for Sammy like that was great. I just don't know why Heyman was leading, was the lead attorney to prosecute Sammy when that had not been his character to date. That jumped out to me. So yeah, I mean, that's the main thing, the main issue that I had with that.
Completely. But I loved leading into that match. And everything that happened, to me, that Usos Judgment Day match, just the whole, everything about it to me was A-plus, phenomenal. Like, and especially when Jimmy goes out with the leg injury and or the knee injury, and you think that Sammy's going to come in and obviously replace him, it shows, A, how well it was thought out with Judgment Day weeks ago, getting to replace Finn Bálor with Dominic, and then Adam Pearce saying, well, I allowed Judgment Day to do it, so I'll allow you to do this replacement and put Sammy in. That was really well thought out and something that I thought was great to see. And then the other part about it was I really, 99% of the time I can predict these Raw matches. I really thought that Sammy was going to lose the title for the Usos in that instance. And I thought he was going to get pinned, and there were several times they really made you feel that. And I did not know which way it was going to go, and that's when I get really excited about a match, when I have absolutely no idea. And it's very rare to see that, even in the Triple H era. It's very, everything's pretty predictable. That was unpredictable, and that to me was phenomenal. And the last thing I'll say is I think you are seeing a split in the bloodline. I think you're seeing, potentially, maybe not, but like maybe Jay and Jimmy and Sammy going over to the good side and Roman, Paul Heyman, and Solo staying on the bad side, which I think would be a very compelling way to kind of end this story eventually down the line. But, you know, I think maybe there was some setup of that. Maybe not, but just the Usos being the baby faces tonight was interesting. I'll let you guys get to other people, but I'd love to hear what you have to say about, you know, about the kind of the unpredictability of that, because, again, I really thought Sammy was going to lose those championships for them, and then he was going to be finished, and that was just an incredible kind of first hour.
Yeah, and that's part of what is such a shame for me, who's been such a proponent and fan of the Bloodline storyline and saga, is that first of all, I was less into the notion that if a wrestler gets injured in the middle of a tag team title match and they can't wrestle, that means the match is over and the champs lose the belts. That's just not a thing in WWE, and they acted like it was. And it was a sloppy, historically inaccurate setup for the good part, which is, hey, they allowed a substitution midstream for Judgment Day, so I'll do the same here. That made it better, but it still didn't make up for the fact that Pierce just made up something that isn't a thing, which is if somebody gets injured in a tag match, the match ends as opposed to the remaining person just fighting it out for himself without someone to tag. That happens so much. So I felt manipulated or I don't know. It didn't ring true to me. They made up some of the ground with the reference to Judgment Day, which I was thinking before he said it, and I was glad when he brought that up because it helped justify at least allowing a substitution. I would have rather had Adam Pearce not threaten to call off the match and have the Usos lose the belts. I would have rather had Pearce say, well, normally, Jay, you would have to fight alone and try to defend these titles, but your opponents happen to benefit from a substitution, so I'm going to give it to them. To me, that solves all the problems. Okay, Sammy in the match as substitution, absolutely. I felt like major situation here. He's going to lose. That's going to be a huge change in the dynamic with the Bloodline, and it would be a huge mystery going into Saturday because Roma doesn't want to see Sammy until then, and I thought there's a big purpose for that. There's a reason Roma doesn't want to see or hear from Sammy. What's going to happen in this match that's going to make it seem important that Sammy goes and disappears? And we didn't really get that. There was a lot to like in that segment and in the match, but there were some flaws in the setup that dampened my enthusiasm for it. Robert, I want to get your thoughts on all that.
Yeah, I'll start with the Heyman thing. I don't take as much issue of it as you guys do. I get what you're saying, and I think what you're saying would have probably been the right course of action. I kind of interpreted it as Solo and Heyman are not the free thinkers of the group, and that was, you know, that was the will, as they perceived it, of Roman. I didn't get the impression going in that this was necessarily going to be a fair trial for Sammy, especially the way Roman acted in that segment on SmackDown on Friday. So I wasn't as jarred by it. I noticed it in the same way you did, where it was there was some acceleration in it, and then if the segment did get changed from what it was initially supposed to be, I think that probably will explain that hole just a little bit. I don't necessarily disagree with you on that. And I'm with you guys though on the tag match. I absolutely thought that this was going to be another little curl in it, that, you know, he blew the tag team title for them after, you know, sort of overzealously stepping in, which again would then require though not to be the logic of suddenly it's UFC and we can have these TKOs or doctor stoppages going on, which we'd never have really had, as you mentioned. But I do think in general this speaks to something they've done really effective with this storyline is I think there's a temptation to completely make Sammy to be like just the bumbling idiot, and that would be part of his charm. They go there like about 60-70%, but then they pull back where he's actually competent enough, you know, like they did at Survivor Series or like they did tonight, where there, you know, there is value in Sammy being in the Bloodline. There can be justification, and he's not just, you know, the bumbling village idiot that they're going to dispose of at the end. So I think, and not to say that you're not a fan of this segment, Wakes, I think you did lay out many of the positives that I had, but I do think I'm slightly higher on it than you are.
I also thought we got a different version of Sammy tonight, which is fine, and it's the eventual landing place for Sammy to split off and be a babyface and a star and have a spine and all of that. And he did say, you know, I didn't realize how much this would hurt. But for him to just rest his case, I didn't really know what that meant. Is he resigned to the fate and okay with it without putting up a fight? I don't know. I didn't think this Sammy who showed up tonight is the same Sammy that showed up last week. And there's no connective tissue that helps explain why Sammy went from just kind of desperate to fit in and thinking he's earned it to just kind of throwing the white towel in. And it took Jay stepping up to make his case. So, I mean, my 2020 hindsight, I'd have had Sammy be flustered and frustrated and trying to make a case and have Jay say, you know what, Sammy, I got this. And then kind of save Sammy from it rather than have Sammy just throw in the white towel first or say, I don't even have a defense. Like, this is something he's desperately wanted, and I just don't think he'd go down without a fight. And I thought the line of, I didn't know how much this would hurt. It just, I don't know. It seemed like the writers of the Bloodline went on strike Saturday and Sunday, and we got someone who was only half paying attention writing tonight's segment. And they're good, talented writers, but the connective tissue just wasn't there for where everybody landed tonight compared to where they were last week. This felt like an angle that would have made total sense 3 weeks from now and been brilliant and great, but not on just a couple days in between. Brad, back to you.
No, just having that. I still do think at the end of the day that segment was wildly entertaining. Wildly entertaining. And
great,
well, that's really,
and great,
I mean,
use of the video clip,
I want,
too. Like, I love, sorry, Brad, I love the video clips like that showed, you know, here's an unfair representation of Sammy, but here's all the things he has done for the Bloodline. You also had, you know, the awkwardness of fans cheering for Sammy to be in a group that the fans are otherwise booing, which includes Paul Heyman, who threw Sammy under the bus unfairly, and Solo Sikoa, who's going to attack him from behind with a Samoan Spike. But fans are cheering for him to be oozy enough to get the acceptance of Roman. It'd be very difficult to explain to somebody just dropping in the middle of, you know, this WWE storylines. It'd be very difficult to explain why fans want Sammy, who they love, to be part of such a despicable group. And we sort of have to just give it a pass. But the key to it working is Sammy really wants it. And we want Sammy to get what he wants more than we want to intervene and say, Sammy, maybe this isn't the best group to be associated with. We just want, because Sammy wants it so bad and we like Sammy, we cheer for him to be accepted by them. But that Sammy wasn't there tonight. And it made the incongruency of the core aspect of the crowd reaction and the angle make less sense because of it. But go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I also loved how they played those clips with no announce. You know, Michael Cole in the background. It was just complete, you know, raw footage of it. And it was kind of cool seeing that. The other thing that was interesting was the ring announcer not being, why am I forgetting his name all of a sudden?
Mike Rome.
Mike Rome. Sorry, I was thinking like Michael Cole, but I know that's not. Yeah, it was interesting that it was the girl from NXT, the woman from NXT, but whatever. That was interesting, and I think she did a nice job. It's just kind of weird for such a big episode. And the only last thing is just LA Knight is, I mean, he has three great catchphrases. I mean, he has yeah, but he also has everybody saying L.A. Knight where he points, and then he's got the let me talk to you. I mean, he is the fact that he was in the ring with the Undertaker, I think, tells you everything that you need to know about where they see his future going, and it's big time. And the fact that he's even in this match with Bray Knight is the first feud, I think, says a lot too. But the fact that that was part of it with the Undertaker was very telling for him, and I just thought it was a wildly entertaining show. I thought it was one of the best wrestling events I've seen in a long time, including pay-per-views. That was a pay-per-view, and I'm excited to hear from Matt on site or whoever, but you guys do a great show as well, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it. Brad is in luck. We've got Matt of Delaware, who attended tonight on hold also. Matt, welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Really good. Really good. We did end up talking to somebody who was on site at the top of the show. I don't know if you had a chance to hear any of that. So we won't keep you super long, but we definitely want to get your perspective on being in the building and, you know, the ebb and flow of the show and what stood out to you. I'll throw to you first, kind of open-ended, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, I did hear your earlier correspondent. Sounded like he had a good time, and luckily I didn't have to travel 3 hours to this show like he did. It was only about 20 minutes away, but it was a packed house, man. I was at the same arena for Extreme Rules, and there was more people in the building, and it was a much more vibrant atmosphere. A very diverse crowd. I mean, I emailed you a picture of the arena, and I tried to email the part of the arena that's usually not that's usually vacant. And, I mean, there was people packed up all the way to the top of the arena, all the way around, too, not even just the, you know, the TV side. Even the hard cam side was completely packed, and there was people packed in around the big screen. So there was people with limited view that were actually in there. Now, I've been going to WWE events at that arena for probably – since it opened in 1997, and this was one of the larger crowds I've seen there in years. But they were very into almost everything. It was almost like they couldn't do anything wrong tonight. Now, it did, as somebody mentioned earlier, it did get a little bit dead during the Bianca match, but, you know, it's a three-hour show, and during a lot of the matches, people tend to just react to the big moves and things like that. But people were really – the Undertaker gong, that pop was probably the loudest pop. And then when he came out on his bike, the sustained pop there was pretty serious. And then the Brock Lesnar, when his music hit – even though he's not a legend, you know, people just go nuts every time they. Every time I've been in an arena when Brock Lesnar comes in, people are just so fascinated to see Brock Lesnar. And
Matt, let me pause. So let me pause here, so I don't forget to ask this. What you talk about Lesnar's pop, but also talk about how it affected how the reaction to him changed, if at all, when he went after Lashley and helped Theory win.
How it felt for me was I'm looking at the clock and I'm saying there's no way they're going to get this match fully done with a clean finish in 15 minutes. It's no DQ. Somebody's probably interfering. So for me, I kind of saw something like that happening. Now, with other people, they get so excited for Lesnar that it doesn't matter who he's attacking. They're just so – it's, oh, my God, Brock Lesnar's here. And so it's almost like everything happens and there's a big frenzy. And then after he does the F5, the Theory on top of Lashley and the pinfall's counted, everybody's like, wait a minute, Lashley just lost. And Lashley was pretty well received there. He was, you know, people were doing the fist pumping thing that he does, you know, when he smacks his fist together and then shoots the arm in the air. It kind of goes along with his music. And but people were very supportive of Lashley. I wouldn't say they were disappointed at all in the finish because you could kind of see it coming. And the crowd more or less felt like they were just they were just happy to see star power and see stuff they don't normally see. And after seeing, and like I said, a diverse crowd, so age-wise, you know, a lot of people who were friends in the Attitude Era, like the APA segments and things like that. But the lesser thing for me, it kind of made me a little bit disappointed because I like Bobby Lashley, and I all the fans are rooting for Bobby Lashley, and then we have this super duper baby face that everybody loves come in, and it's a great pop and it's great energy and everything, but it kind of throws a damper on what you were trying to get done in the ring.
What was your take on the reaction to Hogan and the reaction to Ric Flair, and how do they compare as two big legends with talking roles?
They were both well received to me. I mean, I wouldn't say that, you know, either one of their reactions blew the doors off, but like AJ said earlier, Hogan came out first, you know, first big baby face out, it's going to get a big pop. And just hearing that real American music, that Rick Derringer song, you know, that just puts people in nostalgia. And so Hogan got a good reaction. Flair got a good reaction too, you know, woos all over the place. There was actually a guy in my section and full on Ric Flair, looked exactly like Ric Flair, the robe and everything. And but I will say this, I heard earlier, I think maybe AJ said he wished that they had given Ric Flair his own segment. You know, maybe he wanted to introduce his daughter, you know?
I think AJ was saying, because Ric Flair spent, we talked about this in the 90s. I talked about this in the late 80s when Ric Flair was when Dusty Rhodes was a booker. And you know, I know Dusty is beloved now, but in the late 80s, among the types of fans who listened to shows like this, Dusty was the villain and Ric Flair was a hero, and Dusty booked at the expense of Rick, and people wanted Rick to stand up for himself more. In the 90s, it was, why do you let Eric Bischoff treat you this way, Rick? He brings you in when they need a rating and then disparages you or doesn't treat you with that reverence otherwise. But, you know, Rick would always pop a rating, and heck, even in between that, the way Vince McMahon portrayed Ric Flair, there was mixed feelings on that. Stand up for yourself, Rick. Stop putting over WWF, making you a star. You were a star before you got there. Rick is a complex person, and in his personal life, you know, at times a disaster. As a performer, he's been more of a pushover than his fans have wanted him to be. My interpretation of what AJ said was, Rick, push for you to have a segment that's about you and not putting over your daughter. I don't think it was blaming management for forcing Rick to do that, because I think Rick is all too happy to talk about his daughter at this point. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but I can understand some fans of Ric Flair who have been longtime fans going, hey, Rick, do a segment about you instead of just deferring to your daughter, who we know you're, you know, proud of.
Right. Yeah, I guess I see what you mean. That makes sense. Yeah. It's kind of like when Flair wrestled The Undertaker, and he thanked The Undertaker for helping him realize he can still go. And Undertaker's like, you're Ric Flair. What are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
But
Robert, is there anything you want to jump in with to ask Matt about his experience tonight?
Yeah, I'm curious about the crowd as a whole. They were you can say they were cheap pops, but any references to the Eagles, obviously, and what their position is right now in the playoffs, got a heck of a reaction. So I'm just curious, like, with that as sort of our base, this was not one of those big city crowds that was really interested in, you felt like, the takeover of the show. Did you get the vibe that everyone that was there was in a good mood and wanting to be there? Like, what was the – I was more so than any individual segment, what was the general vibe amongst the people in the building?
Number one, I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, so I'm not in the same mood as all the Eagles fans are today. Number two, and Wade, I'm very sorry for that 40-3 loss that we handed you guys a couple months ago.
Yeah. Hey, I went into the playoffs.
I went into the playoffs
not at all expecting a run to the Super Bowl. I think some Cowboys fans did, and Buffalo Bills fans. And yeah, I mean, it's
– Oh, we
some,
always
some
do. Every year we're going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But no.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So with the Eagles, to compare that with you, so the Eagles are going to the NFC Championship game. A lot of there was Eagles chants all over the building tonight. Now, the last time I did the on-site correspondent was when Raw was when in Wilkes-Barre, PA, and that was about 3 days, 2 days after the Phillies had lost the World Series. And that crowd was probably, it was like a funeral in that place. And I remember that being the first thing that you asked me when I called in, was what was going on with that crowd tonight. And that was the night that Theory cast in on the 24/7 and all that stuff. Or on the, I keep saying the 24, on the U.S. title and all that stuff, and then lost, and he did his Money in the Bank thing. The crowd tonight, like I said, they were just, it didn't seem like anything could go wrong. They were into everything that was going on.
That is interesting.
They were happy to be there.
Think of how different the night could have been if fans were upset, you know, were bummed out over, you know, the Eagles being upset by the Giants instead of just in a good mood that they're, you know, maybe on their way to the Super Bowl, certainly on their way to the NFC Championship. So that's an interesting observation. Matt, I don't want to keep you too long in part because we've had some people on hold now for well over an hour too. Is there anything else you want to share with us before we let you go about your experience tonight?
Just before the show, before Raw proper, Tozawa was defeated by Bronson Reed. Tozawa got in all his offense, and then Bronson Reed quickly finished him with the tsunami. And then the other main event taping match was Dana Brooke and Nikki Cross. They both wrestled a pretty good match with each other, and then Nikki Cross finished it with the neck breaker. And there was a little bit of frustration or, like, confusion in the building about the cage match. And there was even a little bit, I would say, disappointment. And, of course, seeing Undertaker and seeing all these other things sort of makes up for it. But at the same time, you know, things happen, but they could have cut other things. That was one of two women's matches on the entire show. And it was one with, you know, two of your top stars, you know. And Becky Lynch, for me, that's my favorite.
They have had 30 years, Matt, to practice formatting Raw and timing it out. And to flub that badly, but still deliver a Sonya Deville match, you know, and I don't know. I mean, they should have planned better. And they should have had some better buffer so they didn't have to undo one of the major or not deliver on one of the major matches that they advertised. It's bad enough for TV viewers, but, I mean, there's some people who pay money to see a cage match, a historically significant show with a historically significant featured match, and, you know, and they called an audible because they were short on time. You know, it's just that's not good, and I understand some fans being bummed out about it. They should be.
And we all got to just stare at a cage hanging over the ring for 3.5 hours. It was great.
Just being reminded,
and watch them bring it down and then bring it back up. And but I'll say the other thing that because this I didn't want this to slip my mind. You mentioned about the Bloodline segment, and when I agree, when I saw like the rundown that it was going to be a tribal trial, whatever they called it, I was like, wait a minute, did I miss something in last week or something, or did I miss a week here, like? Trial for what? But then, I just to play devil's advocate, because I agree with you, the all of a sudden Heyman's coming at Sammy like that and in this very abrasive way. But then I think that what they were trying to do was when they would show those exhibit A, exhibit B, whatever, that was supposed to be telling us why Heyman's acting like this because of these things happened. And Sammy doesn't care. Sammy's given up on arguing about this because of he did these things that Jay's showing us. But at the same time, that you know, again, it caught me by surprise. And there's explanation. That's just one way to look at it, I guess. One way to interpret it.
Yeah. All right. Well, great. Matt, thanks for making time for us tonight. Glad you had a good time.
All right. Thanks for having me. Everybody go or stay VIP, and I'll be in touch. You have a good night.
Great. Thanks, Matt. Go VIP, everybody. PWTorch.com/goVIP for details on VIP membership, including ad-free versions of all our free shows, which makes for a much more streamlined listening experience, bonus content, VIP exclusive podcasts throughout the week, our weekly newsletter in PDF and alt text format with exclusive features, archive access dating back longer than Raw has been on the air, including retro radio shows that predated the Raw era. Lots of cool stuff. All right, let's go next to Jay in Hartford. Thanks for being among those who have held since the beginning of the show, Jay. Welcome, and I'm eager to hear your thoughts on tonight's Raw.
Hey, Wade, thanks for bringing me on, and good evening, Robert. So I'll try not to take too long here, but I got a few points or a few, questions. I enjoyed the show. Thought it was great. I want to start with the Bloodline segment. Wade, it was just awesome. And I feel like everyone in wrestling right now should study Roman Reigns. I never thought I'd say that if you go back 4 or 5 years, right? But I don't know what he did during his time off, you know, before he came back in the heel turn and joined with Heyman, but he's just, it's a different person from, you know, however many years ago. His acting, his, this whole storyline is just, is just top notch. And actually I didn't get to call and talk about it, but over the past few weeks, I had been concerned really that Roman was getting a little too, I don't know if silly is the term, laid back, you know, whereas at one point he was, you know, just super stoic all the time, right? And then lately he's been more smiles and this and that. And I'm like, well, I guess he should be because, you know, he's on top of the world. So I'm like, we'll just go with it. You know, he's got his whole family. They got some titles. But I just thought, you know, maybe he's getting a little too loose. But then tonight, the anger, you know, and then when he yells solo, you get, I mean, it's just like he can act. I mean, I never thought I'd say it.
Yeah.
You know, they even showed a clip of in all the Raw 30 footage, right? They showed like a picture of Roman holding the title, you know, some years back, and it was, you know, the old Roman, and I'm like, man, that guy right there, I'm sure he was getting booed out of the building at that moment. And so just to see the turnaround was great. The storyline, you know, the segment was awesome. Wade, I'm with you, and I think you said it already, but what really struck me about Heyman was he seemed to be on Sami's side Friday night when Roman was upset, and he, you know, behind him kind of quietly said, like, yeah, go, 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 like, you know. And then tonight it's just, yeah, Sami, you're the worst. And so I tried to talk myself into, you know, looking at Heyman, right, as the wise man. And, you know, every week we talk about Heyman's facial expressions, and he's very observant. You know, as good as he is on promos, a lot of weeks he's just standing in the background, staring intently at everything going on around him. So, you know, it could just be that, you know, he's smart, he's observant, and maybe this whole time he's been skeptical of him, of Sami, you know, in a kayfabe sense, right? And then also maybe he's looking to protect his place in the Bloodline. So whether or not he really believes it, he's doing what he has to do to appease Roman and to make Sami prove himself. So I don't know if that makes sense. That may, it's still a sharp turn. It doesn't really explain it, but that's how I'm trying to, you know, make myself accept it because the segment was so good tonight.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you kind of have to come up with a story that makes some sense, but I think they just should have told it better. And frankly, and I thought this earlier and to mention it, the announcer should have said, wait a second, what's up with Heyman? You know, is he just being an advocate because Reigns assigned him that job and he's doing his best, and is this really how he feels? Or just say, you know, has Heyman been phony all along and seeming like he's on Sami's side when he seemed like he was messing with Sami's head and it seemed like it was all in fun, but maybe it wasn't. And he was just some, you know, just the announcers observing, commenting on behalf of the viewers who are wondering and going, yeah, you're not crazy. We see what you're seeing. And it is a little perplexing. I don't want to overdwell on that, but it's just been such a well-done storyline. And it is, you know, worth mentioning. The segment in isolation is good, but it just doesn't make enough sense to me based on what we've seen in recent weeks leading up to it. Jay, what else?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I, so, yeah, let's go another way. There's so much. It was a good show. But I guess I'll run to Lashley and Lesnar really quick. I don't get it. When I dialed in tonight, I think you guys were touching on it a little bit. Lashley, for me, I've been enjoying his work. You know, he became a face at some point, right? And then the interaction with Lesnar, from what I recall, I felt like after that interaction with Lesnar, he had a night on Raw where he came out, like, angry and was, like, I don't know, attacking, whatever. And I'm like, okay, he turned heel, right? And then he had this stuff with Mustafa Ali, and I thought he was supposed to be the heel in that. And then randomly one night he came out and was slapping, like, high fives with the fans again. And so I'm like, okay, he's face, and he's been a face a few weeks, I guess. Then he got fired because he was beaten up. I don't know. He beat up an official, I think. And so the last couple weeks I've been thinking he's a face, but, you know, and wait, I sent that email about the Hurt Business and how, you know, they got to hurry up and make us care, because I'm not a fan of Lesnar coming back tonight to feud with Lashley again, because I don't know who to cheer, and it just takes me out of it. I don't, yes, it's two big guys going at it, but we've seen it before, so I don't really have a side, and it makes it hard to enjoy what, I guess, this potential feud. And as far as the Hurt Business side of it, like, I could deal with MVP and Lashley having a slow burn, you know, little interactions here and there, but the loss by Shelton and Cedric last week, kind of caused by MVP, threw me off. And then to see Shelton, you know, just in the background, like, smiling tonight in the poker segment, like, which was good as far as the Legends involvement, but it just, the Hurt Business thing, the Lashley-Lesnar thing, all of that can go away off my screen, and I wouldn't really care. And I hate to say that, because Lashley does good work, but I don't know if I'm alone there.
Robert, your thoughts?
No, they need to focus last year, because this was going on for a while, and there was even the Seth Rollins interactions that weren't quite set, going back to the time period that you're talking about, and I kind of think they need to get it right. Like, the way Lashley got over this past year feels like it kind of came out of nowhere. Not that it was completely unintentional, but this wasn't something that I think was on all of our radar. Like, he was a good U.S. title guy, and I think if they can get this right, they have they got a good, you know, upper tier guy to have in the mix, and it's been a lot of inconsistency, and I would like for them just to make a choice on it. I feel like it's felt very waffling. And one thing that I would like to see in the Triple H era, when he's done, I think, a little bit better job at it in some places, is not being so ambiguous with these things. It doesn't mean all heels have to act a certain way and all faces have to act a certain way, but the ambiguity, whenever you don't have it around, you realize, like, how much it kind of just kind of take its toll on the product in general. So I'm in complete agreement with you, because also at this point, it seems like Lashley is kind of he's not a WrestleMania main eventer guy, but kind of a made guy in the sense that he is still getting these reactions. And they were talking about the physique, and I mean, the guy's almost like 50 years old, and he still has that kind of value to the company. They need to capitalize on it, because, as I said, with his age and stuff, that window, it's not going to be very long. So if you've got something with Bobby, you know, take advantage of it while it's there.
All right. Jay, anything else you want to add?
Absolutely. I'll go one more point, Wade, and I'll let you guys go. So I appreciate you having me here.
Sure.
This late. So the video package for the 30th anniversary, like the one that's like 4 minutes long and all the flashbacks, it was really good. It was so good. I even text my friend who's like a longtime fan who, you know, he's fallen off over the years. I'm like, you got to watch this. It's our childhood. It's nostalgia. It's just like everything. my problem with, I guess it's a problem, I don't know, but, or my question, just you notice, I guess you can't get everyone in the video package, you can't get everyone on the show, but at the same time, like, you see some people pop up, you know, more than once in the video. So I looked at, for example, when I think Raw, and I know it's celebrating the whole 30 years and not just like 1993, right? But we never get clips, for example, so this was, you know, I'm 39, so I was 9 years old, right? You never get clips of, say, when Brutus Beefcake came back after the parasailing accident and Money Inc. attacked him. Like, to me, that was the first, before Shawn Michaels, like, you know, kayfabe fell out and we thought he, you know, had, like, this serious life-threatening injury in the ring. Like, I remember them attacking him with a briefcase going, like, oh, my God, you know, they're going to break his face. you know, that moment never gets played on television or in any of these packages. And I wonder why, and trust me, it's not like Brutus Beefcake is on, like, I'm some big Beefcake fan, but a guy like that, you know, you wonder why he's never appeared.
I get what you're saying, Jay, but you also might be the only person who thought of Brutus Beefcake tonight. Maybe not, because, I mean, everybody has their era. In the spirit of what you're saying, I get, you know, but I don't know if anyone else is thinking, where's Brutus Beefcake in these collages?
Well, see, but here's the thing. What usually takes me there, right, is Brutus Beefcake, so funny. You're right. You're probably right. But, you know, when Hogan comes out, for example, you know, remember, he was gone. He's in WCW. So when in the early days when Raw first started, he wasn't there when it kicked off, right, and he wasn't there like 90. Well, he was back and forth that 92 period, whatever. So he made his return during that time. So when I think of Hogan in the early days, that's what I think of, you know, Mega Maniac,
right.
And he went on a feud with like Yokozuna or whatever. And I'm like, they always leave that out. You, as a matter of fact, I'm not sure if I saw Yoko in the package, and maybe they didn't want to include Stars Who Pass. So I guess I get that, you know, no Lex Luger. No. So I always wonder sometimes what's the right reason as to why guys either don't appear or just aren't even like, you don't even see a photo, you know, like, I'm like,
well,
know, they play a big role.
I think part of it.
Yeah.
I think part of it is how many people were involved in the videos and what do they remember? What do they recall? And then you just have politics. You know, what's the last thing Brutus Beefcake said in a book or in an interview or in a podcast or going back on shoot tapes? And is that enough to just kind of tip the scales against anything of him being included with so much to choose from? And so you just – a lot of it is that politics. It is this person on our list, so to speak, just kind of where we want to distance ourselves from them because they said bad things about us. And that all plays into it. Robert, was there anyone, either a kind of a personal guilty pleasure favorite of yours who wasn't featured much, or was there a big name, you know, like Jay mentioned Yokozuna or maybe Bret Hart, who when I think of early Raws, I just think of Bret. Were there some people who didn't get enough play tonight?
It was hard to say because I actually have that. The first thing I have written in my notes is that, to give them credit, other than the unmentionables, like everyone was pretty much in there somewhat, I felt, or at least each era was kind of covered. Like, you know, the guys, really with the exception of Moxie, that are AEW guys, and I mean like Danielson and Jericho were featured in it. I'm racking my brain now to think of one of my old sentimental favorites and to think if I was if I would be mad that they were not in there, but it's kind of hard to top Beefcake, especially on a show where you had IRS, DiBiase, and Hogan all actually on the show. So there might have been a need for a redux there. My impression of that was, you know, talk about the politics of it, and it without knowing, it's hard to read into any of these things. And I thought it was Triple H heavy in a certain way. In the past, I think we would see it, you know, Triple H have that. All of a sudden, it's like, DX created the Attitude Era, and then Evolution was the next great thing, and there we go. That's WWE history. That it wasn't that, so I was glad that we didn't see that. With that said, I felt like it focused on a lot more of the recent stuff, and when I say recent, I'm talking about the last, if we break it down to 30 years, the last 10 years of Raw, which where everyone on TV is a Triple H signing, and I thought those people were emphasized quite a bit. And again, they're more recent, so in theory, you know, depending on what type of audience you were really targeting tonight, if it was, you know, the Attitude Era fans and the New Generation fans, that wouldn't appeal to them as much. If it was maybe the guys that, you know, checked out 2 or 3 years ago, I think that video package would have suited them well. But that was something I did notice. It felt like it was featuring a lot of, you know, Triple H adjacent talent on there. I did think in general, though, this goes back to the point we keep talking about, I've noticed over the years on these tribute shows, they either get The Rock or Austin for these shows, and the other one is kind of minimized. And that wasn't the case. They each got little bits of run on that video package, but they kind of got equal time, and that doesn't usually happen. It's usually one of them is kind of the greatest of all time for this year's, you know, Raw anniversary show, and they tend to oscillate, and we kind of didn't get that this year.
All right, Jay, any closing words from you?
Yeah, I just again, the video package was great, though. I'm glad they had who they had on there. I also think, you know, it's probably just the kid in me, right? Like, you know, I'm like, where was Doink? Where was, you know, like, I think about.
I would like more Doink. Yeah, Doink was.
At least
the original Doink was great.
You know, he had some memorable moments, yeah, and like the few with, you know, Crush or the, you know, little, maybe a few things with Randy Savage, whatever. And Perfect Flair, I always get it confused that they were the first
Raw,
but I think it may have been like the second Raw where they had the career, or, I don't know, Loser Leaves Town is maybe what they called it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, you know, throw a clip of that in there, because as a, that was the first, my introduction to that first, you know, to that type of match, and not yet having the internet and really knowing, like, oh, didn't know a lot about the Horsemen. Then I just knew this guy came from WCW, and then next thing he was back in WCW. It's like, oh, wow, this is blowing my mind, you know. So to see a clip of Perfect versus Flair, things like that. But overall, everything was great. I think I'm sure there's a lot more I want to talk about, so I'll email you. I'm standing by after this. I thought that I missed Austin, but I thought that KO, the way he kind of came out of nowhere and hit the stunner and got a few words in and hit a second stunner, almost seemed a little bit like a bit of a Stone Cold shout-out. So I'll leave you with that, but it would have been much better had Austin been there. So thanks for taking my call tonight.
Yep, great stuff. Thanks, Jay. By the way, you can read our coverage of all of this. I remember to this day writing about the Ric Flair, Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect match from Raw. I remember the excitement over Raw as a new show. And if you go VIP, you can go to our back issue section and jump back 30 years to what we were saying, actually a little over 30 years, to what we were saying in the lead up to Raw, this show that was this mysterious show that was going to replace primetime wrestling on USA Network, and what our early reviews of the show were. It's one of the really cool parts about VIP membership is if you have membership, you can, anything that comes up from the past 35 years in wrestling, you can go look up our coverage of it and read about it in the back issue. You can listen to hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s. I hosted the Pro Wrestling Focus show on KFAN in the early 90s. And there's just it's a gigantic body of work covering wrestling contemporaneously. And Raw, we've been there for the whole journey. So if this show sparked your interest or some nostalgia and you aren't VIP, go VIP. And you can read in our back issues about eras you missed or favorite eras, or go watch an old episode and then see what I had to say about it. All right, moving on to our next caller. We'll go to William in San Diego. William, you often kick off the show. You have had to hold for a very long time. We appreciate you doing so. Welcome. What have we left for you to talk about?
Yeah, no worries. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the historic first women's cage match in 19 years. I mean, what a historic moment tonight. I mean, you already covered it, the absurdity of cutting that match and not, you know, still having pointless Bianca and Sonya match, or even like the 3-on-3, the 6-man tag match with the Imperium and Seth Rollins and the Street Profits. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about it, and as it pertains to, you know, how it affects the feud, because I feel like the feud itself hasn't lived up to expectations, and I mean, this just, how this does not send the message that they just don't value that feud that much. They don't care how, you know, it's a throwaway thing. Yeah, let's just cut it. Who cares? You know, who cares that we've been advertising it for a week or so? We can just cut it. Who cares? And I mean, how do they continue on from here? How do they make people care when, like I say, they advertise it for a week and then at the last minute decide, I guess the bloodline went long. Yeah, let's just get rid of it. Let's 86 it.
And I just want to know, how do they know the bloodline was going to go so long? Like, they know how long the video packages are. It wasn't like anyone just gave a super long speech. I mean, Paul Heyman improvised the comment about ECW is dead. That's cut 12 seconds off or 25 seconds off the cage match. I just don't know how they butchered the format sheet so badly. I mean, they're good at – they've run live shows most of Raw's existence. They should be able to figure this out and not have to cut a match that, yes, they build early in the show as a historically significant match. It's a bummer. You know, it's one of the downsides of the show. Anytime you advertise something and get people's hopes up with stars the caliber of Bayley and Becky, and you deliver an angle but not a match. And you know, could they have done ring entrances off TV and then done a short match? Yes, but how do you do that without hurting what's left of the integrity of cage matches, or having one of the two wrestlers do a job? I guess, you know, it doesn't help the people who paid money to see it, who are big fans of Becky or interested in that match, or Bayley for that matter. But, you know, they can, I guess, feature it over the next couple of weeks on Raw as a make good. I, you know, hope they do for at least viewers. What else, William?
Yeah, and I think the thing that bothered me most, or was kind of like the cherry on top of that, was that they didn't even, like, go back to, you know, a backstage segment of Byron Saxton trying to get in with the trainer and check in on Becky, or some update from Adam Pearce, like, okay, we couldn't do the match tonight, but we'll do it next week, or at the Rumble, or whatever. Like I said, he just, there wasn't, like, any mention of it, and I kind of understand not wanting to remind people that you basically did, like, a bait and switch. But, yeah, it just made it feel even less important when you don't, you're just advertised this big match and you, like, don't go back to, you know, we know we promised a big match, but it couldn't happen tonight. You damage control, they did their thing, but we promised a match, so we'll try to deliver next week or whatever. And I kind of had a bigger picture question about, because I feel like it also speaks to how they handled Becky since her return, because that's also one thing that surprised me. Like, you have a star of her caliber, and it's, like I said, they didn't seem to, like, care much that, you know, yeah, if they did that to someone of Becky's star caliber, and it just sends, like, a bad message of how they see her or how much they care about her. So I just had, like, a bigger picture question of how do you think they've been handling Becky since her return? Because I think she has the potential to be that face of the Raw branch, kind of what Roman is for SmackDown, but it's not there. I think they've been bungling it.
Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, mostly in agreement with that, and I thought that was tonight was indicative of that, where they recognize Becky is something, but they're at the point where they're just kind of taking her for granted, and I think that's really unfortunate because you know, she brings something to the table that almost no one else on that roster has the potential to bring to the table, as you said, with the exception maybe of like a Roman Reigns, and since the return, yeah, it was something that was really high. It was supposed to be a really big deal, and she's, you know, in this program with someone she has this extensive history with, you would think it would be better. All the pieces are there, and it's just not coming across. And you know, we were hearing a couple weeks ago about how, you know, that everyone's so cold on the Ronda match, which makes total sense given all the logic. But I think that's just another illustration of how they've had something really good with Becky, and they've taken advantage of it to a point, but never quite to the level that they absolutely could have. And you know, she's getting older, she's going into motherhood, all this stuff. Like I said, we're kind of earlier with last year, kind of the similar point. When you have this, you need to take advantage, and they're just not. I just feel like it's taking for granted. They know they have something in her, but they're she's not the focus, and what I mean by focus is not just getting TV time, but actually being a focus and having some concentration with what they're doing. I like Bayley in general as a performer, but when you feud with Bayley, it is kind of one of those black holes, though, that you're kind of stuck in because you feud with her for a long time, and everyone kind of feels dissatisfied at the end.
Yeah, I guess my just short answer on the broad topic is I think they can do a better job making Becky feel like one of the biggest stars of this moment in time in WWE. And I'm kind of hoping WrestleMania build and post-WrestleMania sets her up that way. You know, I think Bianca Belair has had a disappointing year. And I thought Jason Paul put it well in his report over at ProWrestling.net. He said, Bianca Belair has so many great qualities, but she suffers from feeling overly choreographed in everything from her entrance to her promos to her match routine. Becky, on the other hand, feels authentic. It's one of the reasons people who like her didn't like her heel character, because they thought, you're really talented at being a heel, but that's not authentically who you are, and we know better. Go back to being who you are. So, yeah, I'd kind of like to see Becky be just framed and treated like, speaking of Dusty Rhodes, the way Dusty presented himself when he was Booker in the 80s, you know, like the center of the universe. And she can pull it off. But yeah, I mean, it's a big picture topic. And it was, you know, part of the disappointment of Raw tonight is that she was part of a big match and it turned into just getting beat down. William, what else for us?
Yeah, I also want to talk about the SmackDown presence on this Raw 30 anniversary show, because I think I like the Bloodline segment more than you did, Wade. But one of the things that I kind of chuckled at was when they were playing all the evidence clips, as they were calling them. Most of them, if not all of them, were from SmackDown. And so here you have this big SmackDown angle opening Raw, and then the Undertaker angle involved Bray Wyatt and LA Knight to kind of further that, you know, another SmackDown feud. And you also had Sonya and Charlotte kind of furthering their story a little bit here on Raw. So I don't know. I'm not really complaining much. I'm just wondering if you think there are any missed opportunities, any, you know, obviously aside from the Becky and Bayley match that we already talked about, any thing from Raw that you're kind of surprised they didn't focus on more on this Raw show, and instead, you know, they made way for a lot of SmackDown stuff, you know, maybe like a Seth Rollins promo making a case for winning the Rumble or something like that.
Yeah, Robert, how do you think they did in terms of juggling 30 years of Raw and that being crunched? Because, you know, the NFL season on Monday nights ended last Monday. And so this is their first chance. The 30th anniversary is around now. And you also have the Rumble coming up on Saturday. So they had to kind of do two things at once. But the idea is, well, you know, we'll get a bunch of viewers for Raw 30. We usually pop a good number for special shows like this. And that will lead to more people being aware of the Rumble. Did they take presumably a larger audience and do a good enough job selling the Rumble itself and also the Raw aspects of the show, including the Raw talent that has a chance to win?
I don't think they really did. Like I said, this wasn't the case where they brought in the legends to just beat up all the young guys. But I had the feeling, and again, maybe I'm using the reference of the 2018 show where this is kind of the implication is everybody's here in town now and everyone's going to stay in town till Sunday, and this is going to be such a big deal. Where again, like, it just felt like a reunion show in isolation, and it did take away from the Rumble build. I think quite a bit, because even the big segment on the show had yes, it's kind of selling the Royal Rumble pay per view, but not really. That opening segment, as good as it was, which I liked it, isn't really selling KO versus Roman Reigns, which is, you know, again, one of your featured matches. The Cody segment, that's a counterweight to that. That was pretty good. But overall, this was not the, you know, I'm going to win, I'm going to main event WrestleMania. Like, I felt like nobody really cut that promo tonight. And as redundant as that might be, it's something that probably is pretty necessary. Because honestly, I think it actually made the Rumble feel very, not necessarily irrelevant, but it's just Cody's match, and that's it. Maybe that's all you want to do, but you would think you would want to add a little bit of intrigue. And that DX segment, again, I couldn't stand that. Even if it was clever, and I did chuckle at some of the jokes, and it was funny, you know, having the Kurt Angle stand in for Billy Gunn. There's chuckles to be had there, but that was a lot. That was the segment that you could say, well, they weren't just getting beat up like the Revival were a few years ago at that other show to the Legends. That whatever all those guys had going on felt very much constricted by what tonight's show was. And then on the flip side, as I said several times, they didn't do anything with the Legends that was so blow away that was like, you know, oh my God, I can't believe this happened, or this big thing. Maybe they're saving some stuff for Saturday. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this Raw 30th anniversary crunched in between the NFL season and the Rumble, and only having one episode of Raw cheated us out of what I think is a fun and underrated aspect of Royal Rumble season, which is wrestlers in little sound bites making a case for why they're going to win, and that stirring your imagination going, well, could they? Might they? You know, can I come up with a scenario where that happens? And, you know, they just, we don't have, you know, what order will they come out in? There weren't tumblers. There was so much time spent on a poker game and DX doing their shtick and a SmackDown storyline with Bloodline that it did knock a lot of other things out of there. And I think that's a a worthwhile point. And, you know, they had some tough choices to make, and we don't have to love the results of all those choices. William, what else?
Yeah, I don't normally get a chance to call too often to those SmackDown shows, so I haven't had a chance to talk too much about LA Knight and Bray Wyatt, but we saw him here tonight, and I was wanting to get your thoughts on just the nature, I guess, of the Mountain Dew Pitch Black or Pitch Dark match, whatever it's being called, presented by Mountain Dew, registered trademark. What are your expectations of it? Do you kind of roll your eyes every time they mentioned the Mountain Dew, I guess, sponsorship, you know, in relation to this kind of dark match where Bray Wyatt is, you know, promising that he's not going to know who he's going to come out as and or what he's going to do to LA Knight, but it's going to be violent. Yeah, sponsored by Mountain Dew.
I just want to know who's going to be in the pink Mountain Dew WWE match at WrestleMania. With the new pink lemonade version of Mountain Dew that's supposed to change the way we look at Mountain Dew and pink lemonade. Robert, your take on we haven't talked to you for months. Your take on the pitch black match and what to expect from that.
Well, you were referencing it, but it's such a weird concept that, like, this violent match over here, this dark and disturbed match for a corporate sponsor. Is something that is very, very odd in general. And then there is – I don't think it really sells it. They've done this before, like whether it's Punjabi prison or whatever. When you have a match, you don't really know what the stipulation is. I don't think that's a great selling point. I think people look forward to what can happen in matches that they generally know the parameters on. So I haven't liked the way they were selling this from the get-go. I just in general, I'm not a believer in Bray. Never have been. And the recent run, I mean, we haven't seen him wrestle, so that's been a positive. But like, that's going to end on Sunday anyway, and or Saturday anyway. So I'm just ready.
Unless
for
they
LA
run
Knight
short
to
on time,
move on.
Unless they run short on time and cut it.
Hey, give Mountain Dew that check. It'll be all good. No harm, no foul. And as you said, in the Andre the Giant Mountain Dew Battle Royal, whatever they have, that'll have to suffice for WrestleMania.
Yeah. All right, cool. William, anything else you want to bring up or close with?
Yeah, last thing. I think after I called last week, Kelly mentioned that, you know, maybe one of the reasons or he mentioned that having Cody announce that he was going to be in the Rumble match almost made it, you know, in a weird way, it almost made the outcome a little less predictable. Like, it didn't seem a surefire thing that Cody was going to win. And, yeah, I've kind of been thinking about that, and it almost seems that way to me, too. Like, I think it was a good idea to announce him as an entrant to the Rumble, because it does bring a little uncertainty into, you know, trying to get into WWE's head as to why they would do it. Maybe they want to build him up and before the match, because they don't have him penciled in as the winner. You know, if he just comes in as the surprise entrant, but he loses, it could be more, I guess, disappointing to fans in attendance than if, you know, you advertise in advance and, you know, at least you delivered on that on Cody's big return. And I was kind of thinking, if not Cody, who else could win? And you guys tell me if this is even a notion worth entertaining. But I was thinking, you know, there's the rumors of The Rock and Roman at WrestleMania. Could The Rock be making an appearance?
Yeah, I mean, The Rock and Steve Austin are going to be in the rumor mill through Saturday night. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a Rumble without a lot of possibilities of who's going to win. I think it's a short list, and we've had that before. You know, I mean, when Batista won, I ran a cover story the week before the Rumble. Batista's winning the Rumble, you know, and then I did a cover story explaining why there's no other option if you know how Vince McMahon books and who the other options are in this. So, you know, that's something WWE fights a little bit when it comes to hyping things, because they want people to be in the Rumble. They want people to be excited about people being in the Rumble, but because the winner headlines WrestleMania and Drew McIntyre is, you know, not ice cold, but certainly iced from anything that would suggest he's on the verge of being pushed into a WrestleMania singles world title match. I don't know. I mean, I think an average casual WWE fan can look at this and say, I think Cody, Lashley, Seth, Theory, Drew, Sheamus, Omos, Braun, Gunther, and Karrion Kross all have a chance to win. But you have to be a real – I want to put this neutrally, but a rather entry-level fan when it comes to knowing how WWE operates and sort of the meta aspect of, you know, how this is going to be booked to not rule out almost everybody I just listed. But among the announced wrestlers, I mean, I don't think many fans out there are thinking Karrion Kross or Santos Escobar are going to win, or Ricochet or Kofi. But I think WWE could have done a better job building, having some of these other wrestlers build a case for themselves. And maybe we'll get that Friday. Maybe there'll be something, you know, with Drew or, you know, just no matter what brand they're part of, making the case for that to just at least plant the seed so when it's down to the final six or final four, you think, hey, they put a little juice behind this guy in the last week. Maybe it's not obviously going to be this other person is going to win. And I just, part of making the Rumble exciting in its final few minutes is how you present the contenders in the last couple weeks leading up to it. And they just haven't done that this year for a variety of reasons. And some of those reasons we don't even know, and it'll, you know, maybe be more apparent on Saturday. Part of it is WWE just philosophically booking-wise doesn't like to invest fans in something that isn't going to happen. And that's why if they have a big match announced for Raw and they know ahead of time it's more of an angle than a match, they'll actually undersell hyping it because they don't want you to get excited about something they're not going to deliver on. And we're experiencing that tonight with Becky and Bayley, which did not happen for a different reason. So part of what we're seeing is philosophically they don't want to get people excited about Drew or Cross or I mean, Seth has been cutting promos about it a little bit, but, you know, they don't want to get you too excited about your favorite wrestler winning and then being let down, so they just don't have that wrestler talk about winning. I disagree with that. I think the Rumble's more exciting when there's a good list of 8, 9, 10 people that you can conceive of fans seeing as a possible winner. Anything you want to add to that, Robert?
Yeah, I mostly agree with you because you mentioned, like, the Batista example, and I think you're referring to 2014 Batista. Yeah, that really went well for them, you know, having that inevitability in that match. Like, that is a very dangerous thing. And I am super worried about Cody's position going into this match, just as a Cody booster, I guess. Because depending on what happens with Roman and KO and all that stuff, there could be an uphill battle that Cody is fighting in that match. And you do not want that right now, especially as we saw in 2014 and 2015. Whenever there's another very popular wrestler that you don't get the impression is going to get the complete main event title shine at WrestleMania, it can go very bad for whoever the winner of the Rumble is, especially in a year like this, where again, even though people are supporting Cody, you know, he's not ripping his pants the way Batista was that year. It feels so inevitable that maybe that's because of, you know, the surprises that are going to come around the corner. I don't know. Can't speak to that, but I just think they need to be very delicate with this.
William, I appreciate the call as always.
Yeah, thank you guys for taking my call. Have a good one.
Sure thing. Thank you. All right, we're going to sneak Kyle in here. Kyle, I'm going to ask you to be brief just because we're running so long, but I did want to get you on the show tonight because you've been holding from the very beginning. Go ahead. What do you think about tonight?
So I'm just going to talk about Bianca. Kyle mentioned a little bit about her reign and her and I've mentioned it too for weeks, or I guess for months at this point. At this point, do you think it's safe to say that, even though she may not lose it on Saturday, but do you think it's WWE's best interest to take the title off of her on Saturday and not have another couple of months and wait for WrestleMania to take the title off from her because of her very boring and very tiring title run? And then what do you think about that aspect, even though it may not even happen, but what do you think if that's a possibility they should do?
Robert, what do you think?
I don't think, even though I kind of agree with you on the disappointment for Run, I don't think Saturday's the day to do it. I think you might need to save it, but you do have the concept of getting the belt on some heel, some more, you know, heelish characters going into WrestleMania. So the possibility is stronger than normal. My hunch is that they're not going to pull the trigger on Saturday.
I still don't get how they can watch back or watch from headsets or whatever, a grown woman in her 30s twirling her braid and skipping and smiling to the ring like she does and thinking that's anywhere close to the best way for that Bianca Belair and who she is and what she stands for and her journey and her presentation of herself outside of that context as a real person and to think that that's the way she should be portrayed. I just shake my head when she comes out twirling the braid and smiling and skipping. It's so beneath a main event world championship level wrestler of her athletic pedigree. And, you know, she's not 21. I mean, I just shake my head at it. I just don't. And I was hoping that would change with Paul Levesque in charge. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to say about it, but yeah, it's been disappointing. And there's been lots of forks in the road for her to go. And I think go in a better direction, and it just hasn't happened. But I don't think Alexa Bliss is going to be the one to end her reign, but I'm not ruling it out. Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah. And then this whole, you know, about, and again, with the whole Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns card, I was trying to really think of if he does win on Saturday and who knows, I'm trying to really envision how will Roman Reigns react to him feuding with Rhodes, and how will the fans react to it? You know, he has been gone for months. And you know, I see Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley, and I guess even now Bray Wyatt, people are so hype around those men in particular. And then what will a Cody Rhodes reaction be like if he wins the Rumble? Because people are expecting him to win. People who are like podcasters want him to win, but the actual fans in the building week to week, how will they really feel with Cody Rhodes potentially being facing Roman Reigns at WrestleMania? What will that look like? So what do you think of that potential scenario if he does win? What's the reaction going to be for Cody Rhodes for the next 3 months headed to WrestleMania? I know it's an unknown, but yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Robert, I think Cody Rhodes is going to be popular, and if he wins a Rumble, be well-received. And if he faces Roman Reigns, I think he'll be cheered. However, we watched him get, you know, be a co-founder of AEW, and you know, a bunch of things happened in over a long span of time, but also unraveled pretty quickly for him. And he is quirky. You know, he's just different. And I'm not saying it necessarily has a short shelf life, but I'm not ruling out the possibility that there could be a slip up in his popularity. What do you think?
Well, I mentioned in the last call, I do think they have to be delicate with Saturday. Because that potential is there, and that's just the Sammy factor alone. Because I don't think there's the full fatigue of him, because he just hasn't been around. Like this isn't what the Roman Reigns situation was, where you know he was gone with injury and then came back, and there really wasn't a justification for him to be where he was at. So I don't think this is that. The long lasting aspect of it is the part to watch, because I think the feud with Roman would be great. Like it's such a natural feud. It's literally bloodline versus bloodline in an actual earnest way. And I think all that can be pulled off pretty well. It is funny, though. He does have a lot of those self-indulgent tendencies that maybe a Triple H had at some point of kind of telling you how great he is and how destined he is. But he would do it in AEW as a babyface, till the bitter end. And I am definitely worried about that, because at least in AEW you can have the less generic match types than what he's gonna have, you know, as a champion in WWE. So I think he would have to lean even harder on the character side of things. With that said, I do think the act we saw in AEW was so much more suited for a main event than a mid card. You know, when he started feuding with Bowens and some of those guys. So. If Cody's going to be in the mix, he has to be kind of towards the top. I think it'll start falling off when he's slightly de-emphasized in whatever way that's been. If he's a co-champion with someone, you know, in a brand split situation, I do think he is one of those guys. The way they presented not the Cody Rhodes, not the Stardust, but the American Nightmare is basically a main event or nothing kind of character at this point.
All right, Kyle, appreciate the call. I want to try to sneak in 606. Haven't been on hold as long, I don't think. But 606, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. 606, you're on the air. Hello? All right. We won't do that then. We will, however, read an email or two and then sign off here. We'll begin with this is, where's the name? Oh, Leander Beattie, who says, would I be wrong to say that tonight's show was disappointing? The Bloodline Tribunal segment was way too long. The match was okay, but maybe it would have been better with Finn Balor. The cage match, Swerve didn't help at all. Seth and the Street Profits versus Imperium was good, but the outcome was never in doubt. It was great seeing so many faces from the past, but American Badass instead of Undertaker was a puzzling decision. Bianca Belair against Sonya Deville was filler at best. LA Knight, Alexa Bliss, The Miz, Kevin Owens were just there to stretch out the 3 hours. Theory and Lashley were an interesting match, but when they say no DQs or anything is legal, it's just a matter of time before someone interferes. Usually I'm excited to see Brock Lesnar, but not tonight. Oh, well, on to the Royal Rumble. Not out of step with some of the critique of the show so far. JB from Detroit said, maybe I'm just jaded, but I'm honestly not super excited about Brock Lesnar returns anymore. One, they're a bit overdone as a top-level surprise, in my opinion. I agree. At this point, we've seen Lesnar and Lashley twice now, and both times they were a bit underwhelming. Sure, on paper, it looked like a spectacular idea, but there just seems to be something missing. And also, who's a heel and who's a face in this situation? Both Lesnar and Lashley feel a bit nebulous at this point. As always, love the show in Go VIP. I'll read one more, and then I'll get your thoughts on any of these, Robert, as we sign off. Zach in Texas said, Raw 30 started on a sour note when they sent out Hulk Hogan, starting the show off with an unrepentant racist is never a good idea. Sammy and the Bloodline were great as usual. Frankly, the show peaked there. I worry they're going to have Roman Daniel Bryan situation with Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes if Cody wins a Rumble over the guy who spent the last several being the best part of WWE. I found it ironic that Undertaker, who main evented the first Raw against Damian Demento, shared a segment with Bray Wyatt, who is basically Damian with a fleshed-out backstory. That's where my goodwill ends, though, because they advertised a steel cage match we didn't get. They did a beatdown angle just so they had time to fit another DX reunion in. Screw that. I tuned into Raw to see Becky Lynch wrestle, and I got ripped off. I thought Hunter wouldn't bait and switch us, but clearly the Vince influence is heavy. So, Robert, any thoughts on any of those comments from three emailers?
Yeah, we covered just about all that, and I think both three emailers are more lockstep with where we're at, because I think, Wade, you and I were on kind of a different plane than the people in the building definitely were with this show. But I think that last email really kind of sums up well. The Becky thing is interesting. I thought I was going to kind of be a lone ranger on how the Becky thing went down, and that's got some steam, I think, as we've noted tonight.
Yeah, yep, I agree. Yeah, I don't have a lot more to add to that, but I did want to give those perspectives on the air here. So Robert, we'll sign off there. Tell people about your podcast. We didn't do that yet.
Sure. So every Monday night, as part of PW Torch's daily cast lineup, myself and Rick Monsey, we host MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans. It is mostly an MMA-based show, talking mostly UFC, but we'll hit a little Bellator, PFL, and some of these celebrity fights. But we like to do it with the tenor of a pro wrestling podcast. So we talk a lot about the builds to things, the business side of things, the aesthetics. And we also talk quite a bit of pro wrestling. The last couple of weeks have actually mostly been filled up with half Vince McMahon, half Dana White talk, because those two guys just cannot stay out of the news for the last month, which is great for our show, but not so great for everyone else involved in those situations. And then now we're heading down the stretch of wrestling season, so you'll get a little more wrestling heavy shows in the next couple of weeks, but just like pro wrestling, the news kind of never stops in MMA, and it's never not the most ridiculous thing that you've ever thought of. So we definitely enjoyed doing the show. We had a lot of humor and our own personality, and we can go off on all kinds of tangents. So go ahead and check us out, like I said, every Monday night as part of the Daily Cast lineup.
Search PW Torch in your podcast app and subscribe. It's free. And there's a different show every day of the week, including Robert's show with Rick. All right, Robert, thanks. Great having you back on. Fun episode.
Great to be back on. Just a side note, the last time I was on was the Wilkes-Barre show. I went and looked it up, so I guess I'm just the Northeast correspondent from now on.
Well, we'll look on the calendar, but we'll probably be on sooner. All right, thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you all next time.